Hello, and welcome to the Epic Echo Media Musings. In this podcast, we'll look at the movies and TV shows you know and love, and the things in them that we don't love so much. We'll shed our insight on the problematic pieces of the media we consume while giving you tips to use those pieces to start great conversations. The point of our podcast isn't that you stop watching your favorite shows and movies, but instead to help you use them to start empowering conversations with the folks you watch them with. Enjoy. We at The Echo want your input. Find us on social media to help us choose topics for our conversations and to ask us questions that you'd like us to answer on air. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at The Epic Echo. Hello, Epic Echo listeners. Today's episode contains language that could be difficult or triggering for some listeners to hear pertaining to violence. If you need help or support, please call our helpline at 304-263-8292. Welcome back to another episode of the Epic Echo Media Musings. This week, we are talking about the TV show Euphoria, which is insanely popular right now across all of social media and one of HBO's best known series to date. I am sitting down with Epic staff member Nicole Rome. I will let her introduce herself as soon as I give you a little bit of background information on Euphoria. So Euphoria is an HBO original series that's described as a look at life for a group of high school students as they grapple with issues of drugs, sex, and violence. The series focuses on the relationship between two young girls trying to find their place in the world, recovering addict Rue and new in town Jules. The series began in 2019 and has since released two seasons and two character spotlight special episodes. Zendaya as Rue Bennett and Hunter Schafer as Jules Vaughn, Angus Cloud as Fesco, Jacob Elordi as Nate Jacobs, Maude Apatow as Lexi Howard, Alexa Demi as Maddie Perez, Barbie Ferreira as Kat Hernandez, and Sydney Sweeney as Cassie Howard. The series is classified as a drama and is rated TVMA. The season two finale aired on HBO earlier this year, drawing 6.6 million viewers across HBO and HBO Max. According to HBO, Euphoria season two episodes averaged 16.3 million viewers, which is the best performance for any season of an HBO series over the past 18 years, other than Game of Thrones, which pulled an average of 46 million viewers across its eighth and final season in 2019. So clearly there's a lot of buzz happening around Euphoria, as you can get from all of that I've just blabbered out. Nicole, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and maybe just kind of give your take overall of the show before we dive in.
Hello again. I'm Nicole Rome. I'm the Director of Outreach Services here at Epic. This is my second time on our little Media Musings podcast. I'm very excited. The first time Nora and I were just talking, we did Twilight, and we thought that was problematic. It feels like forever ago. It was much lighter. So my kind of exposure with Euphoria started with Zendaya, just because I love her. So I saw that this was like a really popular show. I actually subscribed to HBO Max for their free trial just to watch this series. And it was way more triggering than I expected. I knew that it was going to cover some tough subjects just like based on all the buzz, but it was way more than I bargained for.
Yeah, the description alone, we could spend a lot of time talking about. It really doesn't prepare you for what you're getting into. But when I first read the description, as someone who comes from a family that's, you know, struggled with substance abuse, I thought that that was going to be the part of the series that was going to be the most triggering, which it is incredibly triggering to watch those scenes. But I really had no idea what I was getting into as far as some of these scenes that I had to, like, even in the field of work that we work in and the stuff we see and hear every day, there were scenes in this show that made me like turn off my TV and have to watch like Full House afterwards. So I know it's pretty bad if I'm going back to shows from my childhood just to kind of ease my brain. There's so much here to unpack.
Yeah, and you had said, like, at the beginning, it's a TVMA show, and that is all that it gives you at mm-hmm. the beginning. That's its disclaimer.
No content.
There's no trigger warning. Exactly. There's no indication for, like, what you're about to endure other than that hey, this is mature.
And Zendaya actually did take it upon herself on her social media to give trigger warnings throughout season two. But I mean, that's not really her responsibility. And most people maybe didn't see that before they watched the series. So I just, yeah, that's a big letdown to know that no one's really prepared when they go into this. And it is so popular. I mean, there were days on social media where I couldn't scroll for more than 2 minutes without seeing people talking about it. So in order to kind of feel like you're a part of these conversations, sometimes you almost have the pressure to watch these shows. And then there's no warning as to how triggering it can be. So if you haven't seen it, we're going to give some spoilers. We're going to talk about some of the negative stuff. But I just want to be like, I just want to keep reminding folks that as you listen to this podcast, we are in no means trying to tell you that you shouldn't watch the show. We've both seen every episode as adults, as professionals, but just in our personal time, we both took it upon ourselves to watch this entire series. So we're not telling you not to watch it. We're just going to kind of give you our pointers on what to talk about and how to kind of digest what you're watching, because they kind of give it to you in an hour and then leave you hanging to kind of guess. So we're going to try to fill in some of those gaps. I feel like we can just kind of start with a character. This is our first TV series, so it's going to be a little different just because there's so much content. So I think we'll just kind of pick a character and just kind of go down the list of any pointers that we want to talk about from both seasons. We're definitely not going to hit all of the stuff that's happened, but it's not a recap. We're just talking about what's important. So I think that we can start with the main character. We can start with Rue. As far as Rue goes, as far as like the relationship abuse or like the sexual violence, she doesn't really have many of those scenes. There is one scene in particular though. It's in season two after she takes the suitcase from Lori's. It's kind of implied that she's in danger of being trafficked.
Yeah.
And it's never addressed after that, which is incredibly jarring to me. Just from a TV standpoint, that's something that's not typically done. But she is injected with drugs as she's being undressed by Lori. And Lori is saying things along the lines of, I didn't get the quote here, but it's like, you know, well, luckily, because you were born a woman, we have other ways of paying for things sometimes. So it's like really heavy implications that Rue's in danger. And there's no follow-up. We just get to see Rue kind of escaping this house, and then she leaves and we don't really hear about it again.
Yeah, that whole scene, well, the whole storyline in general is really scary, especially for someone who is 17, probably. She's 17.
I think so, yeah.
And yeah, she does say at one point, the line is something like, well, luckily for you, people still have something you want because you're a woman. And Rue is so desperate at that point. And I think I actually looked it up. That episode, I think, is their highest rated episode on IMDb ever. It's like a 9.5 or something. It's a very, that whole episode is very triggering in general, but she's so desperate at this point that she goes back to this woman who she owes all this money to just in an attempt to get some kind of relief. And she literally is locked in the home. Like the windows are nailed shut, and she's very clearly aware now that she's in danger and she does escape. I'm hoping that we touch on that a little bit more in the next season and they actually start to call it what it is. Because you said that, like you said, the implication is there, but she's definitely in danger of being sex trafficked.
And I wish that they had taken that opportunity. If you're going to put things that are this graphic in the show, then you kind of have a responsibility in my eyes to address them and not just allude to them and then kind of erase that storyline. So it was a really huge missed opportunity, I think, to show like this is how actual teenagers are being trafficked in the United States, because that's one of the ways that we see it happen. But they just let it fall flat, as time and time again these shows tend to do. So that was a big key point for me that I wish that they had just taken it a step further. At least, you know, I mean, if she wasn't trafficked, then at least put some emphasis on the fact that she was at risk and call it what it is, like you said. But we do see Rue struggle with a lot of substance abuse, which, as we all know, ties into all these other types of interpersonal violence, just because this is a vulnerable population. Obviously, we see Rue engage in nearly being human trafficked. So clearly, all of these things tie together both in the show, and they also tie together in reality. But as far as Rue goes, like I said, I don't think we're going to spend very much time talking about her today because of everything else that happens in the show. Before we get into the really deep stuff, I'm going to try to touch on some of the lesser characters that I think we'll spend some time on today. One of which being McKay. This episode was horrific for me. I think it was season two. I want to say it was in the beginning of season two. I might be wrong on these episodes and seasons. Just forgive me for that. But McKay is Cassie's boyfriend. They start dating when he is in college. We then see him, or in high school, I mean, we then see him go on to college. And there is a scene where McKay is at a college party. Cassie, his girlfriend, is there. And all of the descriptions that I read online just described what happens as hazing, which it very much so is hazing, but it goes much, much deeper than that. I mean, McKay, his genitals are exposed to all of these people. They're like physically like roughing him up and touching him while he's completely naked. I mean, it's assault.
And she's there.
And naked. Cassie is also there.
Exactly. A teenager, a high schooler.
And nothing, they don't really address that that has happened either. And like I said, in the descriptions that I could find of the episode, it just refers to it as hazing. But I don't agree with that. I think it went much, much further than hazing. And it was a really graphic scene as well. And then immediately afterwards, of course, I think that they did an okay job. I wish that they would have maybe had some conversation around it, but they did an okay job of depicting how that hand, like how his masculinity combated with what happened to him. He didn't know how to process it. He actually kind of aggressively has sex with Cassie immediately afterwards, because he's clearly just, he doesn't know how to process this. And you can tell that his masculinity at this point and after is pretty fragile. But unfortunately, we don't really get much more McKay after that happened. There's no room for any growth or development or even just a continued story arc. Once this happens, there's a pregnancy scare with Cassie. She gets an abortion with her mom. And then that's kind of the end of McKay's storyline, as far as I remember it.
Yeah, it pretty much is. McKay has a lot of similarities to Nate Jacobs, who I'm sure we're going to spend the majority of our time on.
Absolutely.
In that he was raised in a very like toxic masculine, hyper masculine type way, having a lot to do with sports and physique and girls and control and things of that nature. So I think that it did do a really good job of having him kind of reckon with that in light of this assault. But you're right, it's kind of at the end, he's just kind of seen as the jerk. And then that's where it is.
Which, I mean, you can be a jerk and also still be a victim of assault. So they just don't do a great job at the duality of these people that they try to give them. But then it seems like one side of them always ends up falling short. And although I don't obviously like or side with McKay's character on most things, I truly think that they could have given that storyline a little bit more grace and just airtime to begin with. Because if you're going to show the assault happen, you're going to show him grapple with his masculinity. I just, again, think that there was a little bit of responsibility to kind of help him through that. But it's not really a show about character growth, as we will get into. So yeah, we talked a little bit about McKay. Cassie's storyline, there's a lot we could go into here, but just for time's sake, I think that hers is probably not going to get as much showtime today either. Eventually, she gets into this triangle with Nate and Maddie, which we will get to in a minute. But as far as right now, while we're still on lesser characters, I want to talk a little bit about Kat's relationship, because it ties into the bigger picture of what we're talking about here today, which is that the only representation of teen relationships we tend to get are these combative, explosive, dramatic relationships. And we were so close to getting just a good relationship in this one with Ethan and Kat, after Kat had been, the revenge porn had been released, and she goes through her whole self-discovery, and then she meets Ethan, and they are so close to being in just like a normal teenage relationship, like going out to bowling and with her friends. But then, of course, there's a line, I believe it's Maddie, that says to Kat, stop flaunting your healthy, non-abusive, wonderful relationship. It's actually triggering, which I think just sums up the point we're trying to make here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they literally kind of tear down the fourth wall and say, like, nobody cares about mm-hmm. this relationship.
To the point where it makes Kat not care
right.
about the relationship.
Exactly.
She's like, over it.
She's no longer interested because all of, I mean, it's, she expects her relationship to have this turbulence because it's just kind of put into teens' minds. And I think this was actually a good representation of what happens. I just kind of wish they would have not done it to the only good relationship.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I mean, it's exactly what teenagers actually are going through. And well, if we're not calling and breaking up one night and then having, you know, passionate, loving conversations the next night, then it can't be true love, mm-hmm. which, I mean, we have this conversation time again. It's just not, it's not realistic for a healthy relationship, but this is what we're showing people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And she is surrounded by all of these toxic relationships, and her closest friends are Cassie Howard and Maddie, who, like, she's with them all the time. Rue is kind of more of the omniscient, like, narrator person who, mm-hmm. who doesn't have many other scene partners other than Jules. But she, yeah, she's always surrounded by all of this toxic stuff and all of these red flags and all of these things, and she's just like, well, I guess that's what it should feel like, that's what it should be like. She has like a fever dream at some point about like how she wishes that the relationship turned toxic and gives her an excuse to get out of it. It's like a whole thing. So it is really kind of sad that a lot of the teens that are watching this, which it's questionable as to whether or not teens should be watching this. But yeah, I mean, we know that they probably are, and that these are the examples of relationships and love that we are showing them.
And while, I mean, obviously we with fully or almost fully functioned brains, or fully formed brains, excuse me, that can actually process all of this information might see that as like, oh, they're alluding to those relationships, mm-hmm. or, oh, you're supposed to see beyond that. When you're advertising this as a show that's about teenagers and about them trying to find their place in the world, of course you're marketing it to actual teenagers who don't have a fully developed brain even mm-hmm. to like process and to think, oh yeah, maybe they are telling me that I shouldn't think that way, or maybe mm-hmm. they're poking fun at that stereotype. These people aren't understanding that. They're seeing the beautiful aesthetics and the beautiful outfits and the makeup, and they're thinking, that's what mm-hmm. I want my life to look like. Mm-hmm. And they're going to try to do whatever it takes to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely seeing the Nates and thinking like, ooh, I mean, people love Nate. There's like a huge fetishization around Nate, and they're completely ignoring the Ethans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you should definitely be more interested in starting a relationship with someone who is more like Ethan. But people love Nate Jacobs so much.
Yeah, it's really jarring. And since we're here, I mean, we might as well just dive right in to Nate. So just a brief rundown in what we see Nate do in these just couple of two seasons. Just, we have 20 episodes or something like that. And we see him attack, threaten, and stalk a college student who sleeps with Maddie. We see him choke Maddie. We see him threaten to leak Jules' nude pictures. We see domestic violence between Nate and his father, who I also plan to touch on, don't worry. We see him threaten Maddie and himself with a gun while he has her pinned down to her bed for almost leaking the video, something I'm sure we'll get into. So, I mean, these not only are huge red flags, these are probably the biggest red flags mm-hmm. when it comes to dating violence. And we see him do legitimately all of them. And like you said, there is still thousands, if not millions, of people that have fawned over him on mm-hmm. the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard one for me to process. It truly, truly is. Because normally, like when we talked about Twilight, for example, those were like implications that if they were in a real relationship could be dangerous, mm-hmm. but it was fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
there's no fantasy involved in these relationships and in his relationship with Maddie. It's just what actually happens, and the fact that people aren't seeing that at its actual value, it's scary to me. It truly is.
Yeah. And I think that we, I mean, not only being, like you said, fully formed adults with, you know, some exposure to this work, like we do this work, we see this stuff every day. All of the things that you mentioned are actually what we call in this work lethality indicators. There is a tool that we use, it's for short called the DLAG, and it is the Dangerousness and Lethality Indicator Guide that we use, but law enforcement is also supposed to use, other allied professionals such as judges are supposed to use, and he ticks off many of these boxes. He strangles her. He legitimately strangles her at the carnival after she questions his masculinity and his sexuality and embarrasses him. And
that's like the main reason. Yes.
And he does not like the way she's dressed. Mm-hmm. He's very embarrassed by her. And as we know, that's like the number one no-no for abusers. Like they did a very good job at depicting. They do a very good job at depicting a lot of these things in Nate, but he cannot be embarrassed. He cannot feel shame. If he feels as though he's losing any bit of control, he explodes. But like I was saying, strangulation is a lethality indicator. Harming or threatening to kill someone or yourself is a lethality indicator. Possessing a firearm is a lethality indicator. Stalking is a lethality indicator. Like all of these things increase by like a lot the likelihood that it is going to end in a homicide and that Maddie will be killed. So it's really scary, like not only for, again, teens watching this show, but I'm a professional in this field watching this show and just ticking off all of these boxes as it goes on. And I'm like, wow, this is like a scary, this is a very scary person. And I think they tried to give him a little bit of vulnerability and not necessarily excuse things that he's doing, but you can see that they try to make up reasons as to why maybe he is the way that he is. So I think maybe that's what some of the obsession with him stems out of. But I don't find him to be likable at all. So it's hard for me to try to figure out how other people might might get there.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right when you say that they do. Like, I mean, we could legitimately do a whole case study on Nate's character alone to show people the progression of like abusive relationships, the signs, we could use it to exemplify the DLAG. Mm-hmm. Like this truly could be used in our field in so many different ways as an example of an abusive relationship. But the key point to remember here is that while we are coming to the show with this background and with all this information, the average watcher, which I mean, I don't have age statistics on these. I really wish that I could find that. But I'm gonna guarantee you that majority of them are in high school and have probably never even had an actual open conversation about relationship mm-hmm. abuse. So they're not coming in with the knowledge of, well, this is insanely unhealthy. Or if they are, a lot of them are coming into the mentality of like, oh, I could probably fix Nate, or Nate wouldn't do that to me because mm-hmm. I wouldn't let him mm-hmm. because the show doesn't, there's no adults, right? There's no actual adults to yeah. say, hey, this is horrific. And the adults that we do see are pedophiles or trying to cope with their kids' drug addictions. Like, I mean, it's the dynamics of the show are very unrealistic when it comes to high school students. But the most important thing that we need to remember, and that if we have parents listening to the episode today need to remember, is that your kids aren't coming to this with the same knowledge that we all have as adults. They may legitimately, and it's not anything to look down on them or to think like, oh, they're so young and naive. They need us as adults to meet them with this information and combat what they're seeing on screens, like Euphoria, because mm-hmm. it's the most watched show on HBO, mm-hmm. except for Game of Thrones, which no high schoolers now
right.
were watching those live.
Right.
So all of these numbers are depicting the young people mm-hmm. who are those 6.6 million. Those are the young people that are yeah. watching the show. And we know that a large percentage of those have already experienced some form of relationship Absolutely. Abuse statistically. Mm-hmm. So I just, as we watch shows like this, as they're in the media, it can't only be agencies like us that are combating this narrative of abusive relationships. The conversations have to stretch and go to homes and to schools and to after school programs. And that's why we're really trying to push this message so hard. And Nate is a great example to show the signs. I mean, he, gosh, there's just, I feel like I haven't even touched of his storyline. It's scary. But truly, if you just follow Nate alone from the beginning to the end of Euphoria, it even paints like a step-by-step guide that we can look for as far as the red flags and the risk factors of these relationships. I mean, it starts, I guess you would say, innocently enough with the party and Maddie in the pool with the guy, and then he goes to him. He doesn't immediately take it out on Maddie. He goes to him first. So then we see the progression of he starts to get more and more aggressive towards Maddie. And then by the end, of course, you know, what happens with the gun. And then he ends up with Cassie for a little bit. And then I'm concerned about what's going to happen to both of them after he just was humiliated in front of everybody at that play. Like, that's... just based on the information they've already given us about this relationship, I don't think that that's going to bode well for either of the two girls. It's a lot. There's a lot to unpack
there. There's so much. And you just like kind of briefly touched on all of the things, and like all of those things we could easily spend one whole episode on.
Exactly.
It's literally crazy. But like, in terms of, like you said, you can see it kind of a progression, right? Like the cycle of abuse kind of starts with that honeymoon phase. And then there's like the tension building phase and then the explosion phase. And we see this not only once, but it feels like every episode. Like there's the honeymoon phase where Maddie and Nate are happy, I guess, for lack of a better terms, together. It's definitely more of a sexual thing than anything. And then the tension starts building. Maddie makes a lot of comments about, she says in several occasions, and you referenced one earlier, that she knows that this relationship is abusive. She's very aware, but that won't stop her from loving him. That's not a direct quote, but she says something to that effect. And then of course the explosive phase, the strangulation, the guy that you referred to in the beginning that Maddie hooks up with in an attempt to make Nate jealous, it obviously works. And the explosion in that sense is that he beats the guy almost to death.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the explosive period at the end with the gun, which that whole scene, wow. But yeah, and you'll see that this honeymoon phase becomes shorter and shorter each time, which is very indicative of real life abuse, right? This is a very common phase, or very common cycle. And the honeymoon phase doesn't last as long as it did the last time and the last time and the last time. So yeah, it's definitely something that you can watch and see these red flags unraveling.
And while they are highly dramatized, of course, as everything is in the show, they're like, we're telling you, they're pretty straightforward as far as the actual signs and behaviors and risk factors. They're just heightened for dramatic effect. Like, sure, I mean, he might have, you know, stalked and beaten this guy in his home in like a dark, edgy way, and like the lighting is all off, and of course that looks more dramatic, but stalking an ex-partner or a partner's ex or whatever, and then threatening them, and then actually causing physical harm, these are all real things that do happen in abusive relationships and that we handle every single day. Mm-hmm. So don't let the kind of like the lighting and the aesthetics make you think like, oh, well, this is just for TV, because this one is actually getting it right. There's really little dramatic effect when it comes to the actual relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one more piece that I really want to spend a little bit of time on, which is after Nate chokes Maddie at the carnival, she has visible bruising, right? Which we've talked about it multiple times on The Echo. Strangulation is no joke. It is one of the most serious types of bodily harm that we try to warn folks about all the time. It can go undetected, the type of harm that it does to your body, but you if you have been strangled. Please, please, please don't underestimate what that can do to your physical health. She has some visible bruising, very clearly. It was a pretty severe moment of strangulation. And then after that, she can't really hide it, right? So like someone comes forward and it comes out to where the parents have to come and get involved at the school. And it makes Nate and Maddie even closer afterwards.
Yeah.
Like they kind of have this attitude of like, everybody wants to keep us apart. So it's us against the world.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is largely Nate's doing. He definitely manipulates the situation and he manipulates Maddie in a lot of the same ways that he manipulates Cassie later. Mm-hmm. One of his like go-tos is to withhold attention and affection, which he does because he's about to be charged for a crime. And that whole scene, by the way, when the law enforcement is there, do you remember this?
Vaguely.
They literally handcuff Maddie and cut her sweater off of her body. Mm-hmm. So like, that's not real, just so we're all aware. That's definitely a sensationalized piece of this. And kind of just drawing back to the guy that Nate beat senseless that Maddie hooked up with, they actually end up conspiring with each other to blame the whole thing on him. Mm-hmm. And say that he was the cause of the strangulation. And it's very, like I said, sensationalized, like they're like this Romeo and Juliet, they're being kept apart by all of these forces that are out of their control and they're going to find a way to be together. It's not romantic. It's terrifying.
But it works for him and it works for actual abusers because Maddie is obviously terrified of him, but you can see clearly that she's also terrified of what her life is going to be like without him, whether that be because of the state of constant drama and the state of constant, like, just adrenaline that he keeps her in, not knowing what it's going to be like without that being there, or the fact that he has kind of just essentially convinced her that nobody else, of course, because this is one of the biggest abusive tactics, nobody else could ever love her the same way as Nate, right? And she becomes kind of convinced of that, as do most survivors. And so I think that moment is another really clear window into what actually happens in these relationships. Is you would think, okay, strangulation just happened. Clearly that's going to be an off period, but it's really just the opposite. It's like a really passionate, they are brought even closer after this happens, after the law enforcement get involved, after everything, it brings them closer together.
Yeah.
And that's obviously at no fault of Maddie. Clearly there's some manipulation tactics being used by Nate. So I think that's an important key point we could talk about too. And I have one more character that I am ready to talk about because it's, honestly, they're tied for who frustrates me more
to
have
to watch.
Oh, absolutely. I'm about to say Cal. I think they're honestly tied, not in screen time, obviously, but in how frustrated I am. Honestly, no, I think Cal's makes me even more frustrated because there's nothing we can learn from Cal's experience.
No.
Cal is a pedophile that sleeps with children. They claim in the show, as with most of these relationships that are an adult and a high schooler, that he didn't know that she was in high school until afterwards. That's not realistic. I mean, I am an adult who is 23 and I can identify a high school student just with a glance. Typically, there's really no need to be like, no, there was some wiggle room. I mean, on purpose, Jules is meant to look like a high school student in this show, like a child, very thin, very lanky, very hairless, very childlike. And that is what Cal is attracted to, which makes Cal a pedophile. And then the most frustrating part to me, which if you even have to say that when you're talking about a character who's a pedophile, you know, it's about to get worse. The part that frustrates me the most is that the writers choose to handle that by saying, well, it makes sense that he's a pedophile because he's a closeted gay man.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously any closeted gay man is a predator.
Yes.
And that is incredibly dangerous. And I saw people that were sympathizing with his story and, oh, he was in love with his high school best friend, but then his wife got pregnant and that ruined his whole life. And I was sick to my stomach watching those scenes. I don't think that deserved any airtime. I don't need whatever he thinks his reasoning is for sleeping with children. And I especially am incredibly disappointed that they took that and they made that the queer story mm-hmm. arc that we got in this show. They're definitely trying to get us to feel empathy for a pedophile, which yeah. I don't think there's any room for.
They do, again, they dedicate so much screen time to humanizing this character. And in addition to, just his you know, sleeping with Jules and however many prior to her, go into the fact that he, and I guess an attempt to mask the fact that he's also attracted to men, goes like 10 steps forward in raising Nate and decides to instill this like hyper masculinity into him.
And he's an abuser. I mean, he's him and Nate get into a physical
abusive
altercation. Like he beats the daylights out mm-hmm. of his son, making him also an abuser.
He raises this child to be a certain way through whatever reasons he can come up with in his head. And then like tells him, well, like, I hate who you are. I don't like who you are. And it's like, you need to kind of put a mirror up, you know, like this is kind of your doing. You did this to him. You made him this person. But yeah, I agree that it's definitely extremely dangerous. The moment that episode happened that delved so far into his background, it's like, well, you know, all of these things happened. It's very explainable because he's attracted to men and he, you know, lost his first love and he never right. got to be with his first love.
It paints into the narrative that a closeted queer person is dangerous to others, when in reality, the only person that a closeted queer person is dangerous to is themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the lack of support system, I mean, the suicide rates go up in actual real yes. scenarios with LGBTQ yes. individuals. They are not going to turn on society and become no. some dangerous predator. They're going to turn inward onto themselves and they're going to not like that piece of mm-hmm. themselves, which clearly they were trying to show that Cal did. But I just think this whole storyline is disgusting. It legitimately made me sick to watch mm-hmm. as a show that has these huge numbers. And that is, I mean, we have Hunter Schafer, who is a trans actress who I absolutely adore. And they were clearly trying to make some kind of a statement of like, mm-hmm. yeah, we're trying to be affirming and we're trying to do all this stuff. And for everything that they got right with Jules's character and letting Hunter be involved, to me, I mean, I just think it negates it when you have those two things in the same episode.
Yeah,
like how can you have these two characters sharing screen time and have their stories even interconnect, mm-hmm. but then still use his sexuality to evoke empathy? Mm-hmm. I wanted to touch on that
super
one.
Super intentional. I think that's one of Jules' first scenes.
Mm-hmm. She gets to town and like it's immediate that mm-hmm. that hookup. And then obviously we also see Jules with Nate, and then Nate uses the video against her and blackmails her. And Jules' character, I mean, truly just doesn't really get much peace throughout the entire show.
No,
really.
No, she doesn't. Not at all. I did want to touch on one other thing.
Yes,
if
please.
We could go back to Maddie.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we kind of touched on it. I don't think we overtly said it with the McKay stuff, but I think that Euphoria does tackle a lot of tough subjects, but it often isolates the conversation of race.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we see that with McKay, and we kind of explained some of the reasons why, but I think we also see that with Maddie. She just kind of like this other stereotypical Latina character? It feels to me as though she is hypersexualized, and the stereotype of like being obnoxious and loud and aggressive, overtly sexual, she checks every single one of these boxes, mm-hmm. right? And I think that there is some nuance to her character. I think that they do, it probably wouldn't have even been there 5 years ago, right? And I think that they do a good job of trying to make her a fully formed person and explain some of these behaviors. But at the end of the day, the behaviors are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in and of itself can be problematic, especially when you kind of put her beside Cassie, who's also very interested in Nate, who's also very obsessed, I guess, for lack of a better terms, with Nate. And Nate seems to kind of oscillate back and forth between, even with Jules, like the three of them, which one he can see a future with. And nine times out of 10, it's always going to be Cassie, the white blonde girl. In his dreams and everything, he says that she would be the one he would settle down with. She makes the most sense to have a baby with. Mm-hmm. Whereas Maddie's just kind of like this sexual piece that he does get that drama with.
Yeah, and I also think, I mean, while we're on the subject of the interesting ways that they chose to try to tackle race, I'm pretty sure Maddie is the only one other than Fezco, the literal drug dealer, with a job in the whole show. I think she's the only one that's depicted as to having to have a job, which of course she is. You know what I mean? Like, that's such a subtle difference in the characters, but it doesn't go unnoticed for me. Yeah. I mean, except for Fezco, like I said, who's using his job as a front to sell drugs.
Yeah.
She's the only person that we see having to work to kind of keep up with what the others are doing.
Yeah.
No, even though we know that Rue's family is poor, Rue's family is obviously also not wealthy, but not even Rue has to keep a job.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. And definitely not something I'd thought of before, and just kind of off the cuff. And also recognizing that she works for like a rich white family.
Mm-hmm. Of course she does.
And
right.
Is trying on the rich white mom's outfits and aspiring to be that person. Definitely not something I thought of before. That's a really good point.
Yeah, that was a great note to kind of, I think, wrap everything up. I want to now, I guess, give us both the opportunity to say like a couple of key points we want folks to start having these conversations about. We've unpacked a lot of content here for you, but we'll just try to sum it up. If you want to try to sum up a few points, I'll try to sum up a few points, and hopefully we'll start some great conversations.
Yeah. I hope that what we've done here in this 40 minutes isn't too confusing for people that haven't watched the show. I think we both did a good job at trying to explain what we could so that it wasn't super confusing and get into too many of the weeds with the different characters and their storylines. But I think that the most important thing is, again, just not even just the teens in your life, but like the post-teens in your life that are definitely watching this show, which are probably more the ones that it's targeted to. And I think that when I was doing my research, it was 17 to 30 was like the age frame that the target was. And obviously we know people outside of those brackets on either side are going to be watching the show, but just taking kind of what we've brought to the table and doing maybe some additional research, understanding what the DLAG is, you know, understanding when to be looking for red flags and kind of ticking those off in your head, understanding what the cycle of abuse is. All of these things are really going to be important when you're watching this and maybe watching it with folks in your life. I think it's just going to be really, really important to kind of take what we've said and maybe take it a step further and be calling these things what they are, because sometimes I think that the show does get a little bit, I don't know if it's nervous to call things what they are, but again, like, we can call it strangulation because it wasn't just choking. He did strangle her. We can call it human trafficking because that is what was going to occur with Rue and all of these other things. So just like knowing the terms and the verbiage and calling it what it is.
And isn't it strange that, and this isn't just this show, this is most media that we consume, they're more likely to show us the danger than to talk about it, because talking about it is taboo.
Yeah.
But if we're just watching it, then it's just dramatic television.
That's a great point, yeah.
And it drives me absolutely insane because people are way more willing to watch these teenagers put their lives in danger every week and then talk about the episodes than they are to talk about the real life implications of them. So those are some great points. I just have a couple more that I would add. We have to get better at recognizing how dangerous these stereotypes are, whether it be stereotypes about the LGBTQ community or racial stereotypes. We not only have to start recognizing them, but we have to start calling them out as we see them. As we've seen with how popular social media is right now, I mean, viewers have a huge influence on what happens and what doesn't. TV shows get canceled because viewers don't like them. TV shows get more seasons after they've been canceled because of the outpour on social media. So if we truly are paying more attention and we're able to actually call out these stereotypes, that's the only way that they're going to stop making their way onto our screens. So I just hope that people pay more attention to those. When you're using social media to talk about these relationships and these characters, please understand the implications of what you're saying on survivors who could be seeing that. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about Maddie and Nate's relationship, you're not just talking about Maddie and Nate's relationship, you're talking about relationship abuse. So just be conscious of sharing, you know, graphic images or videos or just blatantly, you know, paraphrasing episodes or whatever you're doing on social media. Just be aware that while these writers might not give us content warnings at the beginning of the episode, there's people that are being incredibly triggered and who are really, really looking for some solace when they go on the internet afterwards. So just try to be a voice of encouragement and not a voice that's just going to pass more judgment.
Especially for folks who don't want to watch it.
Right.
Who have like actively chosen not to come onto social media.
And it was everywhere. I mean, every Euphoria release day, you couldn't not see it. It was everywhere. So just please be like conscious of those conversations that you're having, and then have these conversations about the difference between these on-screen relationships and real life healthy relationships. There can be passion without drama. There can be relationships without ups and downs that are so deep and wide apart. So just talk about normalizing better, healthier relationships that aren't so high stakes, which weirdly enough, I think was the last point I made in our last episode together, Nicole.
I think so.
All right. Any other final points before we wrap up today?
I don't think so. I'm glad that you had already had some exposure to the show because I really did want to talk about it. So I'm excited we got to.
Again, we were not by any means trying to cancel the show. I think I can speak for both of us when I say we will be watching when season 3 comes out in the next couple of years. So please continue to watch it. Honestly, I think it's a great show to have attention, like, be pointed towards, as long as we're combating the negative stuff with these positive conversations, which we started here today.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Thanks so much.
This does do a lot of good things too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the view alone, which obviously isn't the point of the show, so we didn't spend much time talking about it, but just the substance abuse that we see throughout the show, that's for like the first time, maybe a lot of these teenagers' first time seeing the negative effects of what could happen when you start abusing substances so young. So it's doing some good work, but that work really is only going to be cemented if we talk about it. So
absolutely.
I hope that y'all will have some of these conversations. Thank you so much for sitting down with me, Nicole, and thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Media Musings. Do you have an idea for a TV show or a movie that we should talk about next? Send your ideas over to us at epicwv.org/epic-echo. Thanks for listening.